What's up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Up Podcast. A big one. We finally get to talk about it. Carlos Mendoza, officially the manager of the New York Mets, introduced today at a press conference with David Stearns. James Schiano live on the scene with some notes and news and info about what was going on, questions being asked, and just the entire experience, as well as we have some roster moves that have gone on, talk about some free agent stuff. And your boy, Mark, I went to the Dominican Winter League game out at Citi Field between the Tigres de Licey and the Aguilas de Cibueños, I believe is how you pronounce it. I think I did that one pretty well. Shout out to taking Spanish in college. But you guys know the drill. We're going to talk about everything going on here with the Mets. Make sure you're following us on all our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Go subscribe to the New York Mets YouTube channel to see the video version of this. And if you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Odyssey, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. James, how was the press conference today? How you feeling?
Press conference was great. Lots of just amazing vibes for anybody who was watching or listening or saw anything on social media as it related to Carlos Mendoza today officially being introduced as the next manager of the Mets. Can't wait. A lot of good feelings, a lot of good buzz in the air, lots of just lots of reporters everywhere, lots of cameras, lots of flashing lights, lots of coiffed hair, lots of suits and ties. A lot of good stuff there. Some not so good stuff. Some of the reporters, it's just like some of the questions. I'm like, there needs to be some more positivity. And this is like a great day for the organization. Like a lot of good's happening here. This is a manager with great pedigree, great background. He's saying all the right things. And it's just like some people are just really trying to dig. But I was thrilled. I was really excited. I know you missed the press conference, but it was really nice to be there. Really nice to hear a lot of people have to say. Really nice to feel the excitement from Carlos himself, his family, David Stearns, everyone else in the organization. Great day all around.
Yeah, very cool to hear him talk as well, because obviously he was the bench coach of the New York Yankees. Bench coaches don't talk to the media very often, if ever. So there wasn't really a whole lot of information on Carlos Mendoza made available to us outside of stories and essentially just like anecdotes from people about what kind of person he was, what kind of coach he had been, what kind of, you know, leader they saw him when he was there with the Yankees and throughout his minor league coaching history. And to be honest, everything that I was able to hear prior to the press conference had been super glowing reviews and super positive.
Definitely. And it felt that way in there. And again, just like everything, it was what he was saying was great. And I'll share my notes on that in a second, because I took a lot about everything that was going on there. But just the way he was saying it, he was so excited. Like you could feel that this was a culmination of very much a lifetime of work. Yes. A 13-year player in the minor leagues and then coaching from the second that ended, coming over from Venezuela to make that decision, him and his wife. He talked about the fact that when he was ready to come to America to try and pursue this dream, that his wife was a dentist and she left it behind. She said, pursue this dream with me.
Okay.
Right? Like ride or die right there. Wonderful family man. His kids were there. He says kids' first question when he said he was going to get this job was if they could practice on the field.
That's awesome.
And it was adorable. And he kept saying his kid was a pretty good infielder. And then this is another quote that went around that got asked later in the press conference that when all this stuff was actually happening, when it was getting really close, he was like, you know what? Like I'm going to just take some infield with my son. And he said his kid's a pretty slick fielding infielder and that he was throwing him some picks in the backyard and he got the actual call from David Stearns to make it happen.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, like some of the stuff that I saw even before the press conference too, that, you know, like you mentioned, he's a baseball lifer. And I think there's something to, and it's a terminology that we've used before, but like being like a little bit of a baseball rat in a way where it's just like around baseball as much as physically possible. When you have a 10-year minor league career or whatever, however long it 13. Was, 10, 13 years, while you never made it to the majors, like that just shows how much you love the game. You're like, I'm going to grind this game out. Even if there's a 1% chance that I have a chance to get my dream to come true, like I'm going to keep doing it. And for someone to like do that from 1997 until essentially 2010, and then go immediately into coaching, like you said, and he was an infielder, I believe, in the minors. The Yankees brought him on at one point to be an outfield coach. So clearly the guy is very knowledgeable about just the entire game as a whole. Super excited for someone who, let's be honest, at the beginning of the managerial search, I don't think was necessarily on our list. Like we just didn't really know much about him.
Yeah, I think that might have been opposite. I think he might have been outfielder and then started doing the infield. But I think he did play.
I'm looking at it. At least on Baseball Reference, says he played shortstop, second base, and third base.
All right, well then, yeah, there it is too. But he also, when he started coaching, he kind of rose through the Yankees system very quickly, just having his own teams managing in the minor leagues, manager of the Gulf Coast Yankees 2011, and then he became a roving defensive, just general defensive instructor for the organization 2012. And then he came up to the major league staff with Aaron Boone in 2018, and he was the infield coach. I think it was the infield coach, right? And then also the quality control coach, which is a term that we've heard a lot for a lot of these coaches around the league that have been elevated to become managers the last few years. And what we've heard from people we've asked about that, and a lot of people have said to the media, said out loud, just knowing from people, that's kind of the person who acts a bit as the liaison between the front office and the manager, the coaching staff, and the players in terms of what we want to bring to you analytically, what information we want to provide for you guys, now how we're going to apply it. Because that's two very big different things that everyone inside front offices, baseball organizations say is the biggest struggle in modern baseball, is that we know a lot of this information, how it can help the team, but the issue is relating it to the players, getting it from point A to point B. And the fact that that was Carlos Mendoza's first role in a major league bench under Aaron Boone, I think speaks volumes about what he can bring as a collaborator to this organization. Because that's exactly what he and David Stern said many, many, many times during this press conference. That was the big theme here. Collaboration, collaboration. We want everyone to be working together to make this product the best it could possibly be.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, being on the same page is so incredibly important, especially over such a long season and a game that where baseball is theoretically a team sport, it is still down to like individual outcomes that are going on throughout the game, throughout the season. So everybody being on the same page, everybody being able to understand what is necessary in order to succeed is huge. And look at the teams that have been successful. Like, yeah, maybe there's some older coaches, maybe there's newer coaches. There's a bunch of different guys that are managing teams right now, but you look at the successful ones at the end of the day, and it seems to be top to bottom. Everybody understands what the common goal is here and what everyone's trying to do, and that's win, use the numbers to help you out, and super excited that the Mets are going to be going that way as well.
Definitely. And I don't think it can be understated, something we've talked about in the past, especially the old school listeners of Mets stuff, back to the last time the Mets were seeking a manager. Shout out Joe Espada, who's actually just hired full-time by the Astros. Yep. How important it is to have a bilingual manager. Super. And we heard today that there was press representatives there who spoke Spanish, spoke English, New York one, Espanol. Everyone was there. There was a lot of back and forth between questions. And the fact that he was very, very good at seamlessly shifting his languages. And there were also some moments where I'd love if we ever did get the chance to talk to David Stearns to ask him if he understands Spanish, and if so, how well. Because there were some moments where Carlos Mendoza was just speaking Spanish for minutes on end. And Stearns was looking at him, and I was like, I don't think he knows what he's saying. Then there were other times when he was saying something in Spanish and I could understand it, where Stearns would like start chuckling and like crack a smile about it. So I was like, all right, maybe he actually does understand it. So I want to know that. But just being able to relate to a player like Francisco Alvarez, Ryan Mauricio, just all of the young Latin players that are going to be coming through the system, you feel like you can't understand how important that is. And also just the energy. He's young. He's like, he wasn't a player that long ago, theoretically. Like, he's been on the field, he can make some moves. Like, I love the feel right now.
Yeah, no, the bilingual aspect is something that me and you have both talked about off camera, that it just brings a level of comfortability for, especially these guys are so, so young. Like, I mean, Francisco Alvarez, obviously, what a stud, what a beast, and Ronnie Mauricio, like, we love these guys. But for a lot of them, like, you're now getting this shot at your dream to play at the major league level. And for a guy like Francisco Alvarez, especially, who we know, like, was actively trying to learn how to speak English, just now having a manager there that he can, like, have a commonality with, and if something is difficult that he can't figure out, doesn't have to think too hard. You can just speak to him. Just talk to him. Doesn't have to be like, how am I translating this into English?
And you can speak to him in a way that's probably a little bit more colloquial, probably more comforting, because it's a little bit more homey. Like, I can talk to you in this way that is your native language. Like, we know how much of a struggle it is. If anybody out there knows two languages, you know how hard it is to learn the two languages. It's ridiculous. And the fact that we have these players, Alvarez last year put such an importance on that himself, being able to learn English. He was so excited to do post-game interviews in English, and that was amazing. But that is still a challenge. You kind of have to, I don't know, like, when you're heightening your brain, you're multitasking like that, you kind of lose focus on maybe some other things. So the fact that Carlos Mendoza can, like, simplify that for every single player in the roster, I mean, not every single player, besides Kodai Senga, he doesn't speak Japanese yet. Maybe that's something we can do in the future. Maybe we'll see if there's any more Japanese players in the team. But the fact that basically every single player, 95% of the players in this roster, are going to be able to speak their native tongue with the manager of the team, I think is something that's very, very understated in a major league clubhouse.
Oh, 100%. Just like you said, comfortability. Why would you not want to feel more comfortable playing baseball than not feel comfortable, essentially?
And there were so many amazing things said about people all over the baseball world about Carlos Mendoza when it happened. I think it's really cool that a lot of these things were said by both people who, A, are people who we'd say fall in the more analytically minded side of baseball, and B, not in the more analytically side minded of baseball. Like, I would think about all the craziness that's been happening with the Yankees for the last 2 weeks or whatever. Between Brian Cashman's rants and raves and saying that Giancarlo Stanton can't play, he injured. He said he said openly that we lost an asset in Carlos Mendoza. Sean Casey, who's been the middle of a lot of the chaos with the Yankees, coming in the middle of the season basically to like undo some of the analytical teachings that they've been trying to do with their offensive stuff. And also, we've heard some things that maybe the way the Yankees were teaching hitting analytically wasn't right either, but the fact they brought in Sean Casey to be more of an old school guy. He said that it hit you in the face how much Carlos Mendoza knew about baseball, and he was really impressed by him. So the fact that this is somebody who is so good at relating to people who maybe aren't the most engaged in certain topics that we want to bring into our bench as we go forward as an organization, as the Mets, we're like, this guy knows what he's doing. That is really, really uplifting.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, there always has to be that balance of feel and numbers and analytics and just knowing the game of baseball. And at least, like you said, from all the reviews, all the comments from everybody, seems like both sides really, really like this guy, which is huge too, because like we said, he was relatively unknown. Like, he wasn't someone that had this big resume. He's going to be a first-time manager, and I know that scares a lot of people, but first-time managers have had quite a bit of success, especially recently. Look at the playoffs this past year. I think, what, there was like eight managers that were first-time managers, essentially, that were leading their teams into the postseason.
Yeah, I think we did it ourselves on this podcast. I think it might have been nine of the teams that we're in. I don't want to recite through it now. It's kind of bad radio, but I think it has become a bit of a fallacy that you need experience.
Such a fallacy.
To do that. I mean, I think about right now the Mets organization. I think about the last six managers they've hired as a team. And I don't think, did Terry Collins ever manage in a World Series before the Mets?
Let me double check. I know that he had the Angels job.
He was on
that
Angels team. I'm not sure if that was...
He was before them. He was before them. So no, okay. he had never even been to the playoffs before he managed the Mets, by the way.
So then I don't think Art Howe also had managed a World Series before the Mets.
Nope.
I know Bobby Valentine had managed in a World Series before the Mets. I don't know how far we have to go back for a manager to have had been in a World Series in this organization.
Wow, that's actually super interesting. Well, you keep talking, I'm going to look that one up for us.
Yeah, and I think about a lot of these other managers who have been signed across the league in the last few years as managers who have come with experience and pedigree, and very few of them, basically only Bruce Bochy, has been someone who's been hired with any World Series managerial experience. Same goes for our former manager and Buck Showalter. Same goes for the $8 million man, Craig Counsell. These are a lot of managers who have also never been to a World Series.
The last guy was Dallas Green. Dallas Green was the last manager for the Mets that had any sort of World Series experience prior to being hired as the Mets manager.
How'd Dallas Green do as a manager of the Mets?
Not too well. He had a losing record from 94 to 96 and eventually got fired, and Bobby Valentine took over.
Yes, perfect. There you go. So I do think that that's something that a lot of Mets fans, people in national media have harped on recently. And I just really, just simply don't think it's true.
Well, it's a really, really easy thing to get the casual fan excited about. Be like, this guy's got World Series pedigree. Like, this guy's been there. And you're like, that means he's going to bring us there. If he's been there, he knows how to get us back. It's like, not necessarily. Like, the game evolves just like things evolve, like in real life. Like, everything's moving forward. Everything's changing. You want someone who's changing with or who's keeping up with the changes. And it seemed like Carlos Mendoza is going to be a part of that forward thinking group of baseball guys here. Now, talk about the press conference a little bit. Like I said, I couldn't be there today. I had some stuff going on, but you were there. So give me a little insight on how the press conference was.
A lot of good stuff. First of all, I was in the Piazza Club, which was a nice setup because they had all nice space, had a lot of chairs. It was like it felt like a little regal. It felt like, I love the press room in the Mets, but it's like right next to the entrance, you can hop off the 7 train. You're literally in that room in like 90 seconds. And I was terrified because I didn't know where it was and no one else knew where it was. And I was like, oh my God, I got to find this press conference. So I walk in after Carlos Mendoza, I'm going to feel like the biggest idiot ever. But it was nice being in there. Nice little, they were up on a little podium. They had the Mets thing behind them. And then David Stearns, of course, started it. And he just had so many great things to say immediately. And also just about what he expects a manager to do. And you felt the confidence in Carlos Mendoza coming through from David Stearns. And one of the first things he said in the entire press conference is they were looking to hire someone who not only would lead in the dugout, but lead within the entire organization. And that's going to be a theme of everything that these two are both talking about. Like, say it again, collaboration, all this collaboration. The manager is... In the type of team that I think David Stearns wants to arrange here, the manager isn't just a decision maker in the dugout. It's someone who's interacting with every single person. Mendoza talked about this a lot too, where the culture has to be set from literally the top to the bottom. He said, from me and David Stearns to the players, to the coaches, to the front office, all the way down to player development and the kids in the Dominican Republic. Every single step of the way, there's culture being developed here. And Stearns also talked about how important that was, just because he's going to ask that whoever is going to be his manager, now, of course, Carlos Mendoza, he's going to be asked to communicate with an incredibly wide swath of people, from media members to players to other members of front office to Stearns himself. Like, think about all, and like, that was something that you always like know is true, but you don't really realize it, where it's like he's talking to everybody. Like, yeah. The things that wind up getting down to us on Twitter are the things that Carlos Mendoza is saying in the press conference after the game. And then he's reviewing all this game stuff with the members of the front office too. Like, that is a lot of communication. He said his experience in New York City, his upbeat attitude, his positivity, that was all the main things that got there. And he said he was thrilled to partner with him.
Nice.
And then, yeah. And then he said at the end of the day, like, there's going to be a lot of highs and lows. That's just how baseball works.
Of course.
Like, that's kind of the best part about baseball, no matter what's the game the next day, besides these awful months in the middle here. But
hate to break it to Mets fans. They're not going to go undefeated next year. It's not going to happen.
I mean, don't say that yet. I mean, let's see what happens first. Let's look the cookie crumble. But he said that these two, and they said they're building it because they really have just gotten to know each other the last few weeks since this process began. But they really need a strong relationship. And he's very confident they're going to be able to build that because they're going to be some high highs and some low lows together. And that was something that Stearns was basically saying he was like excited to develop, which I thought was cool too.
Yeah, and I think that's also really important too. Like, a lot of people, obviously we want the Mets to be successful. Obviously we want the Mets to be perfect next year. But they're like any manager. Managers make mistakes. Buck Showalter made mistakes. Terry Collins made mistakes. Every single manager is going to make mistakes. It's about limiting those mistakes and learning from them. So yeah, there's going to be times at point or this year where he's probably going to make a decision. You're going to scratch your head a little bit. But as long as like that decision just doesn't keep happening over and over and over again, those are the things that you're like, oh, the guy's growing. He's learning. He's understanding as he's filling in and understanding what this job needs.
Definitely. And then when he started talking, it was funny because he led just absolutely just first thing he did was thank Steve and Alex for the opportunity, which of course, very nice. And then it was 7 straight minutes just talking about his family.
Nice.
Talking about how proud his dad was. His dad was wearing a blue Mets hat right in the front row. And he's talking about his mom today, as we're recording this Tuesday, November 14th, Carlos Mendoza's mom's birthday.
Happy birthday. Everyone,
yeah. Make sure you wish her happy birthday. Also Francisco Lindor's birthday. Shout out Francisco Lindor.
Shout out Francisco Lindor. And it was Brett Beatty's birthday like a day ago, I believe as well.
Yeah. I think Monday. So yeah. So birthday week at the Mets organization, which is pretty cool. Love birthday week. And he said he literally had a decision to make 30 years ago, whether or not he was going to do baseball or be an engineer like his dad. He said they're both good options for him. And he said that this was like, again, like I said before, this was felt like the culmination of all that. He said he never got to become a big league player, but now he is the manager of the Mets, which is very cool. And he said that the things that David Stearns really pushed to him during the interview process was his four important things, which were culture, people, preparation, and relationships. Which that sounds very corporate America, which it made does. Me like kind of giggle a little bit, but I was like, all right, nice. I like that a lot. And he was addressing the fact that like he had never managed the big league level before, but just talked about the benches he's been on his entire career between being Aaron Boone's bench coach, and Aaron Boone got thrown out of a lot of games. So there were a lot of times where Carlos Mendoza was making decisions and then being a manager in the minor leagues and the winter leagues. And also the fact that this is another thing that I thought was really important in the process. And now we're going back on four consecutive managers the Mets have hired who have had this in common: experience and exposure to New York City.
Yes.
I think it's a very important thing. He was Mendoza like started giggling. He was like, I know how passionate you guys are, which is direct translation. I know you guys are nuts. And I know how the expectations are high. I know you guys want to win. That's my goal.
Mets fans? Mets fans crazy? We always have sane takes. We've never said anything irrational.
Culture came up a lot. But he wasn't saying that he was trying to build a new culture. He was like, I don't know if you guys remember, but 2 years ago, this team won 100 games. And most of the players are the same. So I want to build on that culture. I want to keep cultivating that culture. Like, there already is a culture here. Like, I want to fit into that culture and then improve that culture. But I'm not resetting anything here. Like, that was, I think, a cool, important thing.
That's like what David Stern says too. Remember, he was like, the guys are here. Like, I'm going to talk to them. I'm not going to make them do anything that they're not going to be successful with. So I kind of like that. Talk about being on the same page. These are good things right now.
Absolutely. And another couple of cool things. So they plan to compete this year. And this is about winning championships.
Of course. Always. Right? 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, 3 to 5 years. Still in the window. He said, we still got to have fun. He talked about that it's like it's a long season. Baseball is a game. And like there needs to be fun. These guys, you got to be happy to come to work. You got to be happy with the people you're working with. And that all comes from, I think, just like a changing of the vibe that we're starting to feel here. Yeah.
Everybody takes a deep breath. Like we saw last year at times, and I'm sure you guys did too. Like it felt like the players were a little tight. It felt like this was a team that was like, we're supposed to be in the World Series. We're not playing like a World Series team. We need to do it right now. And if we don't, the season's going to fall apart. And it felt like at times everybody was super, super tight and super, super stressed. So if everybody just take a deep breath, he's going to relax everybody, calm it down. We have good players. There's a core of really, really good players on this team. And like you said, the culture was already there. This team won 100 games 2 seasons ago, just get back to playing that baseball that they can, and they can be very, very good.
Very good. And then he did talk about it. He's like, I like the roster. He's like, I know there's work to do. And he looked at David. David looked at him. And they both kind of giggled a little bit. But then they were like, I like it. I really genuinely like what we have here. And then,
me too.
Yeah, right. And he talked about the fact that since he came from like two different baseball disciplines as a longtime minor league player and as a longtime coach, when he became a player in 1996, baseball was still, you know, details, play the game the right way, fundamentals, all that
hit
stuff.
For he average.
Still, he said, yeah, I still have that still inside of me. But then he became a coach in 2009 as the information analytics wave kind of came through the league, and now really came through the league when he was still a coach through the 2010s and the last few years. So he said, I have that too. Like, I have both these things in me, and you guys can get guarantee that these both of these methodologies of coaching are going to come through with the team of mine. Like, that's going to be a way that we're identified. And I thought that was also really nice. I thought that was another thing that I feel like a lot of fans are concerned or nervous about.
Yeah.
Any team goes too hard in one direction, you're a little nervous about. And again, this is like very different people on two sides of being concerned about either of these things, like bleeding too much into the other. But I think the best part of baseball is that you need to kind of use both of them a little bit in the 100%. Right ways. And again, he seems like just, he's so ready to collaborate and talk to people and like manage these relationships. Another fun thing that's gotten around social media a little bit. He said he cannot wait to have deep baseball conversations with Gary, Keith, and Ron. He said
nice.
Specifically, nice. He said Gary, Keith, and Ron. And you knew he like kind of wrote this one down because he looked down when he was saying it and he cracked a little smile and like got a little chuckle. But I was like, yeah, cool. Those are the guys here. And like, that's nice that you're giving them importance.
I mean, we had a chance to have a little baseball conversation with them during the rain delay with the Marlins game. Where we were sitting in the press cafeteria watching the Mariners Rangers game. They're asking questions about the pitchers, and we got me and James talking to Gary, Keith, and Ron, just rattling off information about Jose Leclerc and Jonathan Hernandez. And we're like, oh man, this is so cool. Like, it's cool that he also feels that as well.
It's like Kyle Raleigh. He's like, Kyle Raleigh's really come along to hither. I was like, he really has.
Big dumper.
Yeah, big dumper. I should have dropped big dumper to Gary. He would probably never talk to us again. But, and the last thing he talked about a lot was just, this was a good question from Jake Mintz, Cespedes Barbecue, Fox Sports, just about who are his, like, not, I don't remember the exact wording he used. It was good, but like not as managerial icons or idols, but just people he like kind of emulates the way he coaches after. And he went immediately to three people. Three people differently. Well, one was Rob Thompson. He said Rob Thompson's a bit of a mentor to him. Rob Thompson, I know a lot of people now know him as the interim coach turned head manager of the Phillies, who got them the World Series, taking them 2 deep playoff runs now in back-to-back years. But it's been 27 years in the Yankee organization before that. And a lot of those years were with Carlos Mendoza, just being a little bit older than him. So he said that that is somebody who he's looked up to. He was very congratulatory of, and he's like excited to have a little rivalry with him. And he also mentioned something interesting that the internet has gone haywire with. None of these words were said, but Willie Randolph.
Ooh.
He said very specifically that Willie Randolph was someone that he's always looked up to. He's always had a great relationship with, baseball relationship, because those 90s, 2000 Yankees teams, Willie Randolph was a coach in those teams, all of them through the way. And Willie Randolph is a legend, for lack of a better term. And he said that he's someone he looks up to a lot. And then this one is not someone he's emulating his game after, but someone he's close with, because also surprising to me, not sure if a lot of people know this, but Carlos Mendoza is only the second Venezuelan-born manager in the history of the league.
Yep.
And the only one also to win a ring, Ozzie Guillen.
Yes.
And Mendoza said he has a great relationship with Ozzie Guillen. He played with him back in the day, and he was one of the first people that called him congratulating him, talking about this. Right? I thought, I was like, that's really cool that like there are only two of you guys in this fraternity, and you have a relationship. Like, that's amazing. We know our buddy Ernie, we talk about him on the podcast a lot, also a native Venezuelan, is elated that this has happened. Like, this kind of maybe might have reinvigorated his love for the Mets, which is bad news for us. But it's crazy that a country that's so rich in baseball history like Venezuela is only the second manager. And to top it on that, he talked about Luis Aparicio, who's the only Venezuelan-born player in the Baseball Hall of Fame. The fact that he actually played for him in the Venezuelan Winter League years and years ago. He even said that Carlos Mendoza, growing up as a child, lived in the same apartment complex as Luis Aparicio and used to ride the elevator with him when he was a toddler.
What?
I was looking around like, are you serious? And like, I was sitting next to Keith Rad. I was like, oh my, how could that be real? Like, is that serious? And like, yeah, he told a couple of stories about it. I was like, whoa. Yeah, he's really within this web of these like legendary Venezuelan ball players, which I think is a good spot to be. You know who else is Venezuelan?
Francisco Alvarez, yes. Yeah. Francisco Alvarez is also Venezuelan. And Luis Angel Acuña.
Yes, also Venezuelan, you're right.
Yes.
But just so many good things, like so many great things and so much positive energy. He was so excited. He was like, I'm ready for this. Like, I want this. Like, I know I can do it. And I can't wait for you guys to watch me do it.
No, it's nice to see some energy, a little bit of vibes, a little bit of like, whoo, ready to go. I mean, he's 43 years old? So a little bit of a change of pace from what we've been used to the last couple of years. But I'm excited for Carlos Mendoza. I'm happy that he was the choice. I'm super excited to see what he can do. And I plead to all the Mets fans out there who are whatever side you're on, just everyone just take a deep breath. Let's see what he does. Let's see how he is. Give him a shot. Give him a shot. That's all I can ask for from the fans that are freaking out on the side where they're like, oh my God, first time manager. It's like, just give him a shot. Why are you making a decision before you see anything even happen? The season's not even close. It's not even 2024 yet.
Especially when everyone has so many good things to say. Everyone should go check out Will Salmon, friend of the show's article on The Athletic from a few days ago about just stories from around the league about Mendoza, more about his tenure with the Yankees because he was there for so long and things that he did. There was a great story he told about after the 2021 season when he was already the bench coach. Also just talked a lot about how prepared he was as a bench coach. Just absolutely maniacal.
Heard that.
Apparently, after 2021, the Yankees were near the bottom of the league in controlling the run game, both how big of leads players were getting and then player success rate and steals. And he said that Mendoza went to the front office, to different analytic departments he was directed to, and was like, how do we fix this? And took their plan of action and then created his own training methodology to bring to spring training that year. And then he got everyone on the same page. And the Yankees in 2022 led the league in opponent stolen bases.
Whoa.
Yeah, right? Isn't that crazy?
And then, that is crazy.
Yeah. Matt Blake, who I remember, I think it was Yankees pitching coach, who I think he was very probably integral in this process, was basically just saying, this is a direct quote from this article, he was pushing a lot of us to not just challenge the status quo, but to make sure that our work has been thorough and that it's been through the ringer and that we feel good about presenting it to the players.
Things
and a lot. Last thing I'm going to tell you guys about his press conference, a lot of what Mendoza talked about was not being afraid to have these difficult conversations with players, keep people accountable, and keep on challenging them to be better, which is something that I think a lot of Mets fans kind of question with this team over the last calendar year, where it's like, what, like, why is this not better? Like, why are these guys not playing to their potential? Like, people talk about that a lot. Like, basically every guy on our roster underperformed last year, almost top to bottom. Every single guy underperformed, basically, besides like maybe Lindor and Nimmo, kind of, basically.
And Kodai,
of course. Well, Kodai.
He's different.
Shout out Kodai, second in the Rookie of the Year ballot. Three people left him off their ballot. They're dead to us. Three people left him off the ballot. Dead to us.
Wait, hold on. Okay, finish what you're saying, and then I'm going to yell about that.
Right. But again, just the fact that he's like, I'm going to be in the nitty gritty. I'm going to bring things to the front office, bring it back to the players. I'm going to challenge people. I'm going to make people be better, and I'm going to push every single person I can while building these relationships. I'm very excited. I think he's a great fit.
Super. I mean, we joked about it. We were saying, like, during the offseason, we're like, we want Mets fans to be mad about whoever they hire. And, like, there were some that were mad. And obviously, I don't think that's the overwhelming reaction. I think by most are like, okay, let's give this guy a shot. But it is funny, like, to see on Twitter, people be like, wow, this guy, why do we hire this guy? Why do we get so-and-so? Why do we get him? And it's like, oh, perfect. This is exactly where I want you. I want you to be a little upset because that means it's the right choice.
Exactly. And that is hilariously is kind of what we wanted, but it's perfect.
Yeah, perfect. So, all right. Back to Kodai Senga now, because now I need to yell a little bit. Do you have the other names? So it was Keith Law and who else left Kodai off?
It was Keith Law, someone from Atlanta, of course, and someone else whose name I did not recognize.
Was it Dave O'Brien from Atlanta? Was it that guy? It
might have been Dave O'Brien. I'll double check.
I mean,
right now.
I'd almost tip the cap there as like, because I'd totally leave a Brave off if I had the opportunity to, just because like hate the Braves so much with every bone in my body. But Keith Law, expect better at Keith Law. He's a national baseball guy.
But I'll tell you this. I bet that Keith Law did that because he's such a prospect hound. Like, that's his whole life, is like making bad prospect rankings for The Athletic. So I think that he's like, this is not a rookie. You know what I'm saying? This is someone like, I would like to see on the other side if he also left Masataka Yoshida off his ballot, because I think that would be the click. Like, that's why I don't think it's as egregious, because I can see conceptually, it's not really true, but I can see conceptually why someone would be like, he's not really a rookie. Sure. Okay. I get that. He's pitching with a different ball in a different country and a different mound and a different days of rest. But nevertheless, is still doing something totally new. But I do see conceptually there, but whoever did on Atlanta, dead to me.
Yeah, well, of course, Atlanta. We hate that city anyway.
Yeah, but, and that was that. Yeah, it was nice to see Kodai get that recognition. Very cool. And yeah, that was it for any award stuff for the Mets.
Yeah, 100%. Francisco Lindor obviously won the Silver Slugger. I believe that was right after we spoke the last time on here. Yeah. So shout out to Francisco Lindor, one of the best shortstops in all of Major League Baseball. Best shortstop in the National League, without a doubt.
Happy birthday, Francisco.
Happy birthday, Francisco. And let's talk a little bit about free agency before we wrap up the episode here, because that's just kind of what we're going to do every single episode. There's been no real rumors, no real news, no real anything besides Penn Murphy going to the Braves. But otherwise, I don't think there's really much else besides just some guys that maybe we want to send our attention to a little bit that we really like. So, James, I'm going to give you the floor for the first guy you want to talk about.
The Pat Murphy thing is funny. I want to address it like briefly just because I was excited about it because I was like, oh, here's a free reliever with a bunch of control. And then it seemed like he got in the building and we don't know what happened. Maybe the Mets were just like, we just rather have this spot open. So we're going to pass him through waivers just to get him to the 60-day IL without putting him on the 40-man roster. And then the Braves, who I think the waiver line still goes based on regular season standings.
Yeah.
So I think they were the last team with the opportunity to grab him. So I think that also might just be like, let's just get him. And they know we could put him through waivers again because if no one else just tried to claim him, maybe then we could just do this. Maybe it was also just be like, let's just like throw the Mets a jab at the beginning of the offseason. But the Mets also could have gotten him in the building and looked at his medicals and been like, maybe this just isn't it. Like maybe we know he's going to miss the whole 2024 season and we don't want to take this 40-man roster spot when a guy's not going to pitch the entire year. We saw the last few years how crunched that 40-man roster can get. So I think that is something that hilariously, I think all the Mets fans are just getting crazy about right now. I love seeing the engagement of some of these tweets about guys like Pat Murphy, who no one knew existed 3 weeks ago.
Who people were mad at you for saying. People were mad at you for being like, yeah, I'm pretty excited about him. Like, he's not going to pitch for a year. Like, who cares? And now that he's gone, they're like, I can't believe we let him go.
It's like Gomman Stearns Al, but
if there was a lineup of five people, you couldn't pick Pat Murphy out of the lineup.
No, literally no chance. And before we do free agent stuff, just following up on things that are actually done as of today. The Mets have to finalize a 40-man roster, which is why Murphy was on waivers. The only player we added was Alex Ramirez. So now he's on a 40-man roster. Hopefully gets the upper minors this year and just gets out of Brooklyn where the wind just knocks down every single fly ball. And now we're only out 33 players on our 40-man roster, which feels low. So it definitely feels like the non-tender deadline, the rule 5, feels like we're going to be active, more active than years past there, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, got to at least put 7 guys on that to fill up the 40-man. Yeah, so like there's either going to be guys coming up or there's going to be new guys brought in. So let's talk about maybe some new guys that could be brought in. I got one, but I'm going to let you take it first, like I said.
Yeah, take it first. Who am I going to talk about? Who didn't I get to talk about last week that I want to talk about?
You know, there's some deep pitcher you got.
Yeah, there's two actually I'd like to talk about kind of weirdly. Weirdly, I would love to just briefly discuss Kyle Gibson.
I'll let you get on your Kyle Gibson soapbox and see what you got.
Kyle Gibson basically just learned a new sweeper last year within the Orioles organization. And it became the second most thrown pitch. It got 47% whiff rate. It got lots of soft contact. Had the second best run value for any sweeper in baseball. It still didn't really lead to him being super successful, but he led to him eating just many, 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 many innings for a team in the Baltimore Orioles that needed innings to be eaten because that rotation for the entire year was just kind of beleaguered. He threw, I want to see last year, why am I in his full career right now? Last year, Kyle Gibson threw 192 innings. That was probably top 15 in baseball if I had to guess conservatively. ERA was still 4.7, but you guys also have to remember, we have to change the way we look at ERA now because last year the league-wide ERA was, I think, 4.4.
Okay.
So that kind of changes where a league average is. So it was not a good ERA. It was worse than league average, but it was better than what a 4.7 would have been the year before that or the year before that. And I think the coolest thing about Gibson is that there probably is still some more fine tuning you can do with his repertoire. And again, I'm talking about Kyle Gibson. I'm like, this is a fifth starter.
Yes.
Is a guy, this is going to be like what Bartolo Colon used to be. Like he's going to show up and just throw 6 innings and move the ball around and like make hitters annoyed. Once in a while, he'd be like, all right, he just gave up 6 runs in 2 innings. Let's get the bats going if we want to win this one. But we need innings right now, guys. You saw how tight they got last year. This team basically needs to add like what? 350 innings conservatively to be able to really compete next year like we really want to do. And Gibson threw 6 pitches last year. So this is why I think it's cool. Like threw 6 of them at least 8% of the time. But he really only used the sinker and the sweeper against righties while he was using all the rest of them, a cutter, a fastball, a curveball, a changeup against lefties. So the fact that he's basically 2 different pitches against guys from 2 different sides of the plate, I think is interesting. It's just the fact that, again, he's someone who can give a floor of a ton of innings. He won't cost a lot of money, and there's like a modicum of upside to become like, I don't know, like a guy with an ERA that might start with a 3.9. Give me 3.9, 175 innings, and you sign him for 1 year, $7.5 to $10 million. That's it. We're taking the ticker tape parade.
James, will you be buying a Kyle Gibson jersey if he's a Met?
If Kyle Gibson's a Met and he gets out of April in the rotation, I'll buy a Kyle Gibson jersey.
Okay, heard it here first on the Mets Sub podcast. Make it happen, David Stearns. For me, some guy that I've been convincing myself more and more, and again, sorry, we're not going to be talking about Shohei Ohtani. You guys know about these guys. Like, we're not going to be like, hey, you know who the Mets should sign? The best player in baseball. We did that last episode. You know all about it. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty. That's why you listen to the Mets Sub podcast. But I've been really convincing myself on Giovanni Urshela the past, like, week and a half. And I think it's just because good depth piece. He can play third base. Last year, he played every single infield position, third, first, shortstop, second. He's had some good years in the past. Obviously, you know him with the Yankees now, with the former Yankees bench coach as well. I feel like maybe there could be a little connection there, just trying to connect the dots here, a little Pepe Sylvia action. But yeah, I like that he plays all positions. I like that he has a good enough glove at all those positions as well. And at worst, it seems like he's basically a league average hitter at worst. So for a guy coming off the bench who gives us defensive versatility, you know how much we love to talk about filling out the 26 men that could be on this roster and have some actual value. I think a guy like Gio Urshela, 32 years old, short little contract, get him to back up some guys.
Yeah, get him to back up some guys. I'm going to say one that really just might send people up the wall right now.
I know where you're going.
I talked to you about this last week, a couple days ago, and I think that's someone that adds a lot of things. This Mets roster right now, it needs some versatility. He might be a former Met. It needs some versatility. It needs some athleticism. And it needs a cheap backup player with just a hint of upside. And you know who weirdly fills that role right now, who's out there in the scrap heap?
I think the people are getting their tomatoes ready for you, James.
Ahmed Rosario.
There it is.
I'm talking 1 year, $4-5 million. Like the same kind of contract that you give to basically the 25th, 26th man on your roster. I'm not saying Ahmed Rosario is going to come back and be the star child we always thought he was going to be when he was mistakenly ranked as number one overall prospect in baseball. But I'm telling you, this is someone who, after he was sent to the Dodgers last year, was positive defensive value at shortstop, which is crazy to think about because he's really just never ever looked even close to that. Last year, in only half a season with the Guardians, he was negative minus 15 OAA, which is deplorable. And he didn't play that again. I'm not telling you guys I want Ahmed Rosario taking even 200 at-bats in this team, but I'm just saying, as someone who is at driveline right now, Ahmed Rosario has always had pretty good plate skills. Not good plate skills, that's not the word. Good bat control. Knows how to put his bat on the ball. Doesn't strike out, doesn't swing and miss. Will expand the strike zone. He'll never not do that. That was the one thing that was always stopping him. Guess what? It totally stopped him. But as someone who puts the ball in play, runs really, really fast still, and could probably give you just a little bit of defensive value all over the infield, and now has experience playing the outfield. Like, as the last guy on your bench, that's a useful guy. Like, I think, like, we've had last year Tim LaCastro, someone who was on our bench. We're like, we love having his speed on our bench.
Yes.
I mean, Rosario is as fast as Tim LaCastro, and he's a better player than everything else. So I think that is something that it's stupid. It's bad. But I'm just like, these are the kinds of contracts that David Stearns kind of made him famous when he was with the Milwaukee Brewers. Finding the last guy on your roster who you think is going to be worth 0.0 war and he winds up being worth 1.0 war. Like, that can change a lot. That could be a win or two that gets you into the playoffs as opposed to being at home at the end of the season. And I think that's the kind of thing that we're going to see. And it might feel really ugly. It might feel really disgusting, but those are the kind of moves that we're going to see be made.
One pitcher that I've been looking at a little bit more, Yariel Rodriguez. I don't know if you've done your research on him, but Cuban, who was pitching the MPB the last few years, he defected from the World Baseball Classic from Team Cuba. He was pitching for them, pitched pretty well. I think 7 1/3 innings, 10 strikeouts, 6 walks, 2 runs during the World Baseball Classic. And then he just stayed in the Dominican Republic, was put on the restricted list, defected from Cuba because he wanted to eventually come to the major leagues. 27 years of age, or at least he will be next year when he's playing. And the scouting report is that he could be a starter. He could be a reliever. The last year in Japan, which was 2022, in which he pitched professionally, he was used in the relief role, but the numbers were still really good. And he does have some good stuff. He has a live fastball. He had a 1.15 ERA in 54 innings in 2022, 2.95 in 2021. And that was mostly as a starter. So a guy that should be a relatively cheap option that could be a back end of the rotation, maybe a high leverage relief arm, depending on how the Mets could view him. And if MLB trade rumors, projections, in terms of what the money value could look like for a guy like Yariel Rodriguez, 4 years, $32 million, comes out to about $8 million a year. That's kind of in that fringe range that me and you talk about of, if you can find some value there, that could really, really lift your team up quite a bit.
Yeah, quite a bit. I do like Yariel, and I think that he's someone who's interesting. He's the kind of guy right now that a lot of people online know his name.
Yes.
No one really knows that much about him, so he gets thrown into every team's like offseason projection. Let's give this guy 3 years, like $35 million. Let's put him in my notes app. But I think that he is someone who can be very interesting. Another guy who I think can be very interesting, someone we've talked about on this show before, someone who's another guy where it's like, it'll probably look gross, and it's a little bit surprising that the team that traded for him the deadline didn't retain him. but who just, it's, this is what we got a live arm, guys.
Who
it's
is it?
Shintaro Fujinami.
Oh, yes, your boy.
Yes, yes. Former A, now former Oriole, depending on if they bring him back or not. Shintaro Fujinami throws really hard with a disgusting splitter. And the Mets last year, we talked about it a little bit towards the end of the year, very disappointing, were one of, I believe, three teams in all of baseball that didn't have a pitcher throw a pitch in the triple digits. That will change the second Edwin Diaz steps on the mound to save, hopefully, the game on opening day. But we need more guys who can throw hard. And that is the kind of thing that you can't just, you can't really fake that. You can't fake velocity. And there's a lot of data that shows that if you throw a pitch down the middle between 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, all the way up to 102, 103, where Fujinami can get to, you're less likely to hit it the harder it's being thrown. So I know velocity isn't everything. And sometimes Shintaro Fujinami would throw a game, pitch in a game, and you'd be like, he has no idea where the ball is going. No one knows where the ball is going. I really want to get him out. Not saying he's good location. He might never have good location. He might never have good command. But the fact that he has a great splitter, he throws over 100 miles an hour, fastball and sinker, with a slider that he mixed in towards the end of the year with the Orioles, there's a guy that probably can give a lot to a team that you might have to pay a little bit for, because you always have to pay for velocity in Major League Baseball. But we didn't have one pitch in the triple digits last year.
No.
And that is something that if you want to be a competitive team, if you want to make the playoffs, you want to compete for championships, that simply cannot happen.
Got to have a little gas. I mean, Edwin Diaz coming back will definitely help us, like you said. But
yes,
it'd be nice to have another arm as well, too.
Yeah. I want two guys to throw 100.
I want five guys to throw. Everybody throws 100 miles an hour. What about that scenario?
That's great. That was what the Phillies tried to do this year. It almost got them all the way.
Almost. But I think that's where we're going to leave you guys with the free agent talk, because of course we're coming up on like 40-ish minutes here of talking about the Mets with you guys. And we still have so much of the offseason left as more rumors and news and free agent pickups and trades come along. Of course, we'll be talking about it with you guys as always. I don't know if anybody was able to make it out there. I know you weren't, James, but this weekend when the Mets at Citi Field hosted the Lidom, the Tigres de Licey versus the Aguias de Cibueños, like I said, at Citi Field. Got there on Saturday. Got to tell you, absolute blast. And I think like over 30,000 people showed up for this Dominican Winter League game at Citi Field in the second week of November, which was super cool. The atmosphere was crazy. Something that I hope if Mets fans that were there notice and recognize, I'd love to bring this energy to Major League Baseball games, to Mets games. Like even if it was like once a week or once a month on a Friday, just some random Friday, they just had like that same atmosphere, that same vibe. It'd be electric. It was so much fun. Like me and my dad did not have a dog in the race. Couldn't care less who won the game. Couldn't care less of the outcome. And it was like we were on the edge of our seats because the energy was just, people were standing. This was an exhibition game. They were standing for the entire game. It was crazy.
I mean, also probably there are a lot of those fans likely would love to go to the actual Winter League down in the Dominican Republic, who probably can't make it there. So it's the only chance they get to see these teams that they do root for. And I know a lot of these players come back and play in these same teams year after year. So there is some true rivalry within this. I saw that.
Dude,
Hansel Robles got in the Citi Field mound, which was pretty funny.
Did you see on Saturday? I was two outs away from seeing a no-hitter.
Yeah,
can you believe funny. That? I was joking with my dad. I was like, I can't believe that there's a chance the first no-hitter I'm ever going to see in my life at a game. I'm going to be like, someone would be like, hey, you ever see a no-hitter? Yeah, I saw the Tigres de Licey and the Aguias de Cibueños throw a no-hitter in a Dominican Winter League exhibition game at Citi Field. That's like Mad Libs. It's just filling in blanks.
Where were you for the Tigres de Licey no-hitter at Citi Field?
Alexander Canario's got a layout for that ball. He came up a little short. He trapped it. They went to review. Christopher Morel jumped on his back running around the outfield thinking that he actually caught it. Went to review. It was obvious it wasn't a catch. He was close, yeah. But Canario just didn't want it. Nah, I don't know. You got to want it a little bit more than that.
I'm disappointed this weekend I couldn't make it there, just had stuff to do, and I really hope there's something that happens in the future because it looked incredible. The fact that they packed 90,000 people into Citi Field in the weekend in November is astounding.
Pretty sick. Yeah. And for like, genuinely speaking, there were no stars playing. There were no big names. Like the biggest name was like Starlin Castro, and that guy's been banned from MLB essentially. So like there's not a lot of big names there. Juan Lagares, I guess, was maybe a big one if you're a Mets fan. You want to see Juan Lagares play center field again. But I think Christopher Morel was probably the best player that was currently playing in the majors that was a part of these rosters. So it was cool to see those guys playing, cool to see like the passion again. And as someone who's experienced the World Baseball Classic, the atmosphere was pretty close. I'm not gonna lie, it was cool.
It's kind of cool to hear. And yeah, now you're making me more disappointed I couldn't get there.
Yeah, you had other things to do. It's all right. Next time. Hopefully there is a next time. Guys, thank you so much for listening and watching this episode of the Mets Up Podcast. Remember to follow us on all our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe to the New York Mets YouTube channel if you want to see the video version of this. And if you're listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Odyssey, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download, and subscribe. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Schiano.
And me @GiraffeNeckMark with a C. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll catch you next week for another episode. Bye.